Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, someone running for governor in Arizona, Karen Taylor Robeson, talks about Arizona crime and schools. And we also have with us Pedro Gonzalez from Chronicles Magazine and Contra Substack, contra.substack.com. We talk about Ukraine. We talk about how some Republican leaders are so out of touch with their voters and also this ridiculous thing of the Great Replacement. Email me your thoughts. It's always freedom@charliekirk.com. I want to make you aware of a special giveaway, tpusa.com. You go to there. There will be a pop-up the first thing when you go to tpusa.com, and you'll be able to get a book for any amount, any gift. You guys get a book, The Conservative Response to the Great Reset. It's a way to support Turning Point USA financially and get something in return. So it's tpusa.com, and it's all about Justin Trudeau, Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates, The Conservative Response to the Great Reset. Get your free book by donating any amount at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. If you've never supported Turning Point USA today, this is an inexpensive way to get behind the amazing work we're doing on high school and college campuses across the country and get an informative book in return. Again, email me your thoughts. As always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Support the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. We are here in my home now, Arizona. I grew up in Illinois, but I chose to live in Arizona. And I could tell you right now, Arizona is like the battleground state of the battleground state of the battleground state. And I really wanted to get kind of a picture of what's happening on the ground in Arizona and kind of the political trends, and also someone who's running to be the next governor of Arizona. We've known each other for a long time. We have some awesome mutual friends. It's Karen Robeson. Karen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And you're barnstorming the state. Whenever I work out, I see your ads on TV, and it's just it's compelling, and you're getting the message out. Tell us why you're running for governor, and then let's get right into what's happening here in Arizona.
Well, I'm running for governor because we're being invaded from the south, and we're under attack from Washington, D.C. As you said, I'm a lifelong native. I was born and raised here. I was born and raised
in
Mesa.
That's rare.
It is rare. 70% of our adult population came from somewhere else. So welcome. Welcome to Arizona, the land of the free and the home of the brave. That's, you know, Ronald Reagan used to talk about the shining city on the hill, and he was referencing America. Well, it's now Arizona. We are the shining city on the hill, and that is why Arizona is one of the top states for people moving to, because people crave freedom. But I've been so lucky my whole life. I've worked since I was a kid. And, you know, there was a time I would tell my parents I was going to write a book about them for making me work, you know, at such a young age, because it was some form of child abuse. I'm sure they would be thrown in jail now for putting their five-year-old to work. But the book I'm going to read is going to be one about gratitude. And the opportunities I have had my entire life to build a career. I put myself through school, put myself through law school, built my career, been very successful, and I thank God every day for it. And I see those opportunities slipping away.
Totally.
I have, you know, I'm a mother of four. I have a new grandchild, and this is about the next generation. This is about making sure that the next generation have the same opportunities. And in Arizona, if you come here, you work hard, you treat people well, you can accomplish anything you want to accomplish. And, you know, I had the opportunity many years ago to work for Ronald Reagan at the White House. And so I quote him often, and we all like to quote Ronald Reagan. But he said, you know, I'm not going to use or spend my sunset years telling my kids what it was like to be free. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, to whom much is given, much is expected, and you can't take it with you.
Yeah, the country's rapidly changing, and Arizona is kind of evidence of that. And it's not all changing for the bad. We have some awesome people moving here, right?
Absolutely.
And we have a lot of entrepreneurs here, a lot of people that didn't grow up here. If you go to our office, I'd say 95% are not native Arizonans here. And so there's some great new energy coming. There's also some not so good energy. But every one of the national trends that we talk about on this program is kind of front and center here, from schools to border to inflation. So let's go through one by one. Talk about the border. Every state's a border state. I was just in Yuma. You've been there many times. Mm-hmm. There are, what, 1,300 daily border crossings?
And about to triple with the revocation of Title 42 if the Biden administration follows through with it next week on the 23rd. They're already amassing on the other side of the border, waiting to come over. There will be a tripling. We now have more coming across the Yuma sector than they do at Del Rio, Texas.
What's the significance? Like, that's so unusual, right?
It is unusual. Well, you know, when you tell the world that our borders are open, there's a reason they come to America. And that, you know, the cartels are advertising in other states or other countries. We now have people coming from 140 countries. And as you just said, it is not just a border state problem. Yes. Arizona happens to be on the front lines, and Arizona is paying a disproportionate cost of this crisis.
Do you think that as governor, what would you do about that, right? So there's like a debate of what you can do and kind of that tension, right?
Yeah.
So walk us through that.
Well, the number one job of a governor is to keep the people and property of the state safe. And it is, you know, no secret, but Congress has failed us. For 40 years, they have failed to give us a functioning immigration system, and they have failed to give us a secure border. We know if we had the political will and determination, we can secure our border.
That's right.
President Trump did it. Where we have walls, they work. And as you said, I've been down there many, many times. And every time I go down there, I learn something new. And it's not just a national security tragedy, which it is, but the human tragedy in particular. When you look at the drugs, I mean, look at fentanyl alone. Look at the amount of fentanyl that's been confiscated just in the last couple months, enough to kill every man, woman, and child in America.
It's killing kids in Scottsdale.
It's killing them. Not a day or a week goes by that I don't hear another story from a mother, a classmate, what have you.
Me too.
And it's tragic. And I will connect the dots if no one else wants to do it. But the precursor ingredients are coming from China to the Mexican cartels to a neighborhood near you. And if an adversary dropped a bomb on an American city and killed 100,000 people, we wouldn't look the other way. And yet that's what's happening. That's why my border plan calls for a multi-state compact with other governors, because it's affecting everybody. And it's not just today and tomorrow. This will affect us for generations if we don't do something about it.
Yeah. So does that include kind of doing what Abbott's doing, which is, you know, we're going to mobilize the National Guard. We're going to do what's necessary. I mean, that's the stuff where sometimes there's kind of a tension, right?
Absolutely.
Between the federal government and the states.
Absolutely. Governor has to do anything and everything possible from, and I've said the very first thing I will do is I will call an emergency session of our legislature. We'll find the resources necessary to send to our local law enforcement along the border, give them the resources they need to deal with the problem. Send additional National Guard down there to support local law enforcement. Continue to build the wall where we can. We've got state land. We have private land. Mm-hmm. We also have federal land, of course, and tribal land. And I can tell you, talking to private property owners down on the border, they will welcome the wall on their property.
Yeah, the tribal's the tricky one, right?
Tribal's
even
the tricky
one. Even more
than
the federal government.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And you know, when I've been down there and you see where the crossers come across.
I know. It's right on those
It's right on the tribal land. And the cartels know it, and they bring these big groups over at a time. So
it's within like 10 feet. It's like they know to go here, but not there.
Yep.
And it's this whole sovereign nation thing. That's tricky.
Yes.
And that's a thicket. So let's talk about inflation as well. Huge issue here in Arizona. Rents are going up. You said 40% year over year?
Year over year in the Class C apartments, which are, you know, the lowest priced apartment rents. That's always the bellwether. And when those prices start coming up, people are getting priced out of any type of housing. And on the single family homes, we have about 2 weeks supply in the Phoenix market. So it is a seller's market right now. And that's why prices are going up the way they are. And, you know, I am a free market, you know, capitalist. This is about supply and demand. We have more people moving to Arizona, and we can't deliver fast enough to the market, because it's not just the rising prices. Or part of the reason that we're having the rising prices is we can't get the supplies. You can't get windows. You can't get toilets. You can't, you know, our home builders could sell more houses, but they can't build them. Not only can they not get supplies, but they don't have the workers to build the houses. So it's quite a conundrum, and it's going to take a while to work itself out. And then you add on top of that inflation and energy prices, which is, you know, leading to the, you know, inability to have a functioning supply chain. It's a mess, and I lay the blame right at the feet of Joe Biden and this administration.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, Phoenix, you could say, with groceries and gas rent, I mean, it's 40 to 45% more expensive this year than last year. And that's catastrophic for most working people.
It absolutely is. With my last trip back from Yuma, we stopped at the gas station. It was $120 to fill up our gas tank. And I saw that, and I'm like, you know, people can't even afford to go to work They can't put gas in their gas tank to go to work. I went to the grocery store the other night and bought some baby formula for my new grandbaby. Because my daughter,
you found some.
I did. Well, I found like, you know, two cans. $45 for a can of baby formula. So, you know, and it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. And the supply chain issues, again, I lay right at the feet of the Biden administration.
Yeah, it's at every single corner. And so when you have kind of these economic conditions, you have a lot of second and third tier effects that people mm-hmm. don't really anticipate. But what ends up happening is you'll see crime go up. Mm-hmm. People can't afford things. They get super cynical, mm-hmm. you know, and it kind of trickles down. I mean, this is why a booming economy is really good for crime, actually, because when you're earning something, you're not going to go break into a store. We're seeing crime go up in the Valley, not in every city, but certainly across the Valley. Really quick, talk a little about that, and then we'll kind of continue on the other side of the break.
My law enforcement plan speaks to this directly with the rising crime rates. And when you have cities talking about defunding the police, I've made it extremely clear, any city in this state mm-hmm. that attempts to defund their police, we will use every authority we have to defund that city. We will back
Good.
The blue.
We should defund Tucson if they try to do that.
Absolutely.
I don't think they're going to do that. But if there was a place that was going to is either Flagstaff or Tucson, I don't think that Paradise Valley would do that anytime soon. Karen Robeson, what's the website?
Really it's quick. Karen Taylor Robeson. Karen for Arizona.
Okay.
K-A-R-R-I-N for Arizona.com.
Okay, great. How's the race going? The
race is going very, very well. I started out this year basically zero in name ID and zero in the polls. In fact, one poll had me at 2% with a 4% margin of error. So you go figure that new math. But anyway, we are...
You can't go negative.
No, right. So we are doing very well. We are all over the state in, I had a significant disadvantage on name ID with a primary competitor. And we knew we had to overcome that. And we are. And we're all over the state, radio, TV. And I am crisscrossing this state, loving it. As an Arizona native, I thought I had seen the whole state. Only to find out, no, there's a lot of places I haven't been to, but I'm every single day.
Gorgeous state.
It is a gorgeous state. Last week we were up in Page. I was up there to tour the Glen Canyon Dam and meet with the Bureau of Reclamation to understand a little bit better, the drought situation and the practical implications of our reservoir system. But while we were there, we went to Antelope Canyon, which is just
one of the great treasures of Arizona.
Gorgeous. And so, every single trip we take, I'm seeing more of the state and loving it.
So crime, huge issue. We were just talking about all the break-ins that we know that are happening mm-hmm. in the local area. But I think inflation and crime are tied together.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, the election is about safety and security. And that's the job of a governor, to make sure that the people of the state are safe and secure. Now, with inflation running rampant coming out of the Biden administration, it makes our job that much more difficult. I heard yesterday, and you might need to fact check me on this, but I heard that 30% of all the money printed ever has been printed in the last 18 months.
I think it's even more than that. Yeah,
I mean, it's unconscionable what we're doing to our kids and our grandkids. We are driving them into the bankruptcy.
Happening in our schools and like all this. So let's talk about the schools too. That's really where there's some things governors could do a lot about. Mm-hmm. There's some things mm-hmm. that are like foreign policies, like very little. But schools is one of the things you could do a lot about.
Absolutely. And I am passionate about schools, and I have been for a long, long time. 18 years ago, I was 18 years ago, I was appointed.
Keep going, sorry.
Yeah, I was appointed to a school board, the Great Hearts School Board, when we had one school. We now have Great Hearts now has 25 schools with a waiting list of thousands of kids, because Arizona parents care about education. They care about choice. We now have more kids enrolled in charter schools in Arizona per capita than any state in the nation.
That's terrific.
We are a leader. We also have, and this is critically important, we have more than 50% of our kids going to a school other than the one that they've been assigned, which tells me parents care. They want choice. And when I'm governor, the money's going to follow the kid into the classroom, and every parent will have the opportunity to pick the best educational pathway for their kids.
Yeah, and Scottsdale Unified has just been so terrible, in the last couple. I mean, Jan Michael Greenberg and that whole thing of spying on parents.
Yes.
And so that's really where a governor can intervene. And like someone like Ron DeSantis, who's just been phenomenal in Florida, and say, we're not doing the CRT thing.
Right.
We're not doing any of this nonsense. We're not doing any of this stuff. We're going to kind of come in. So what do you think of kind of the Ron DeSantis like model of governing?
Well, I love what he's doing, in particular with the schools and with CRT. I have been a passionate advocate for civics education for a long time.
Yes.
I chaired the Joe Foss Institute when we initiated the civics education initiative that requires all of our high school seniors to take the civics test that immigrants, legal immigrants to the country take in order to become citizens. Arizona was the first to pass that, and now that's required in 33 states. So we estimate between 4 and 6 million students, high school seniors a year, have to take that test. I've been passionate about it. And when I go around the state, I tell everybody that when I'm governor, our kids will stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. They will learn to love this country, not hate it. And they will learn that 2 plus 2, in fact, is 4. Yeah. There is this thing called the truth. There is this thing called objective reality.
Yes.
And that's what our kids will learn. My education plan that I just put out a week ago, I'm going to have a civics education camp for our teachers. Because what we're learning is our teachers don't even know the exceptional nature of this country and the history of this country. If they knew it, they wouldn't hate it. And now they're teaching our kids to hate it. You know, if there was a silver lining at all to COVID, parents woke up and saw what their kids were
totally
learning.
Totally agree. Yes.
I mean, everybody, myself included, thought, you know, we're dropping our kid off at school and we think they're learning what we learned as kids, only to discover that that was totally in error. And that our kids today are being taught to hate this country and hate the kid next to them because of the color of their skin.
Yes,
and that has to and must stop.
Really quick, the primary is when?
August 2nd.
August 2nd. And website again?
KarenForArizona.com. And it's K-A-R-R-I-N for Arizona.com.
Great. We'll put that in the show notes as well. And I just want to reinforce, we need so much energy and focus on Arizona, everybody. I mean, this is a state that has now just become a prize jewel of the left. Would you agree? They're pouring money into this state.
They are. I chaired the Republican Legislative Victory Fund in 2020, and I saw firsthand
yes.
the millions and millions of dollars that they put into the state
Mark
then.
Mark Elias, all
absolutely.
These people. Karen Taylor Robeson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And good luck. Keep working hard.
Thank you.
How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? Producer Andrew's right here doing an Ironman thanks to Relief Factor. And truth is, I know there are millions of people. In fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise or just getting older. That can do it, getting older, which is why I'm so impressed with the people at ReliefFactor.com. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. They recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back pain, neck pain, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pain, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted, only $19.95. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Check it out right now, ReliefFactor.com. You should order the 3-week quick start too, discount only $19.95. See if it will work for you. I think it possibly could. Give your body what it needs to heal itself. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Check it out right now. Okay, with us right now is Pedro Gonzalez from Chronicles Magazine. We have him on. It seems we always have him on Fridays to kind of recap the week. And I love having Pedro on because he's just so brutally honest against these feckless, weak, good-for-nothing Republicans. So, Pedro, welcome back to the program.
Charlie, thanks for having me back.
So there's two topics I want to cover with you today. The first is Ukraine vote. You and I are not libertarians, but we sure have a lot of respect for Rand Paul, who is a libertarian, for forcing a roll call vote. What did the Ukraine vote teach us or tell us what we might already have known about the modern Republican Party?
That in many ways, it's actually worse than the Democratic Party. And that might seem like a strange thing to say because the Democrats are insane, but they're honest about who they are. Democrats don't hide who they are. They're honest about who they hate, what they want to do, and what they believe in. Republicans, on the other hand, are either confused, in other words, they don't know what time it is, or they lie to you. So they've basically enabled the agenda of Biden, which entails stealing money from Americans who are struggling right now, and also bringing us one step closer into a direct war with Russia. Right now, we're just in a proxy war. But the Republicans are basically trying to run to the right of Biden on foreign policy to be more hawkish than him. And their justification for it is that this is patriotic. So basically, these people care about as much as about America as Democrats do, which is to say they don't. But they'll wave the flag. They'll talk about freedom and liberty. And they'll refer to America as the indispensable nation while they sell you out and help Biden, who at the same time they're denouncing. But there's really not a whole lot of difference at all between the Republican Party's worldview and the Democrats. This is ultimately just a difference in degree. And like you, I'm not a libertarian, but I really respect guys like Thomas Massie and Rand Paul, who are standing firm on this and issuing actually principled defenses of their positions and why supporting stuff like this is actually un-American. It's not patriotic. But on the other hand, if you listen to Ted Cruz and Dan Crenshaw, what is their principled argument? They don't have one. They just use buzzwords. That if Ukraine falls, Nebraska's next. That this is a fight for freedom and democracy. But what do those words mean? Freedom means empowering the Biden administration to have more control, more control over our fate.
That's exactly right.
To take money from Americans who are struggling right now. They don't. Those positions mean nothing. And I think that's why, for me, what the Republican Party does is morally, in many ways, more reprehensible than Democrats. I'm obviously not a Democrat, but again, Democrats are honest about their positions.
Yes, and I mean, there's so much to unpack there. I want to start with this, which is that they don't know what time it is, which I completely and totally agree, or they're just so ideologically corrupt or misguided. And I respect some of these people on other issues that voted for this Ukraine package, and their statements, it's full of nonsense, where they say, well, you know, we can't have Russia bordering a NATO country. I'm like, well, they actually already are. If you know anything about Russian geography, there's a 1 million person port city, Kaliningrad Oblast, which borders Poland, and it's a military installation. So Russia already has troops bordering NATO countries. So what the argument is that you think that we should further intervene to the tune of $40 billion that we don't have, and that he asked for $33 billion. And something you and I have talked about before, which is one of the Republicans that voted for it, I can't remember too, is like, well, this is us showing that, you know, we're sending American values to Ukraine. I'm like, oh, okay, so that American values, like, so 11-year-olds in Kyiv can get puberty blockers, or that there can be a Planned Parenthood on every corner in Mariupol? Like, is that the American values? I don't think we're sending the American values of Alexander Hamilton with this aid package. In fact, it funds the government directly, does it not?
Yeah, I think this is actually a really important point, because, again, it shows either ideological confusion, they don't understand their own position and why it's wrong, or that they're lying. Because supporting this kind of aid and the process that it entails, I mean, I don't know how else to describe it other than statism. If you're someone like Ted Cruz, who constantly sings the praises of limited government and fiscal responsibility, how can you do that and not, you know, laugh at how hypocritical you sound when you support sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, which is, you know, we're not even getting into the fact that Ukraine is just a haven of corruption that specializes in basically stealing international aid money. This is all really well known and documented. One of the biggest oligarchs in Ukraine, his name's Ihor Kolomoisky. He's a key supporter of Zelensky. This is someone who has actually been in hot water recently for allegedly stealing IMF aid money, billions of dollars of it, through Privatbank, right? I mean, there's a whole connection between this guy and Hunter Biden and Burisma. But the point is, you can't pretend to be against, you know, the state and for limited government while at the same time supporting this. So it just shows
exactly
that
right.
These Republicans either don't have principles or don't understand the implications of their principles.
So 11 Republicans voted no. That's depressing, but it's actually more than I thought it would be. I'll be very honest. Some of them voted no because they said the number was too big, or, you know, the excuses were okay, right? There was only a couple, like Josh Hawley or Mike Lee or Rand Paul, that I think made the correct argument, like, why are we doing this at all? If it was $1 or $40 billion, right, that's actually the correct argument. But if they technically say the amount, I'm okay with that, honestly, because the vote is the same, whether the reason or not. But Pedro, I spent a lot of time with grassroots voters. I spent a lot of time talking to our listeners. This is like an 80-20 issue. 80% of the conservative base, Republican voters, they find this idea of spending $40 billion to Ukraine is insane. Do they not fear their voters?
So 80-20, you said support.
No, don't support sending the money. Do not support sending the money. Like, they're with
80-20,
us.
So you're saying that there's a division between the base and the leadership.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not making it clear. 80% of people agree with us that sending this money is insane.
Yes. Yeah. Why does Republican leadership? On the one hand, I think it really comes down again to this kind of Mitch McConnell's an old guy. I think certainly part of him is still kind of stuck. And that's not to say anything bad about old people, but it seems to him natural to kind of frame it, maybe to lie to himself that this is just kind of the Cold War all over again, right? That this is the Ruskies and Red Dawn and stuff like that. I think he has to tell himself that to justify what is just inexcusable. But on the other hand, so setting that aside, we accept that some of these people are, you know, they really believe that this is Cold War 2.0. If you set that aside, I think it just comes down to the fact that there is a lot of money, I think a lot of political favors, and basically foreign policy, I think, is the kind of cornerstone of the established political order.
I totally agree.
And I think that this is not something that your average Republican voter thinks about, because they're thinking about domestic issues, and that's right. That's obviously the correct instinct to have. But foreign policy is really kind of the biggest expression of ideology. All of the bad things, in other words, that your Republican voter hates about the current government, about the current establishment, a lot of those things run through our foreign policy.
That's exactly right.
Look at it. Our foreign policy for decades has been basically the process of transferring our sovereignty, our privacy, and our freedom to these unaccountable organizations that are basically transnational that we have no control over, right? Like, I don't know if you'd put the World Health Organization under the umbrella of foreign policy, but this is one of these organizations that we just kind of defer our fate to. Or maybe NATO. NATO is another good example, right? Finland joining NATO. So now Americans are going to have to go die basically over, you know, countries like Finland wanting to like mix it up with Russia. Now we have to go protect the borders of Finland. Why does the actions of Finland basically determine our fate?
Yep. You know, the answer is that they actually don't believe in our borders. So they're trying to desensitize us to that by just trying to expand the horizon of what actually matters. And what's so hilarious is, like, if they think borders don't matter at all, then that would invalidate the whole idea of NATO, wouldn't it? I mean, the idea that no border matters, but you and I both know this, that it is a petri dish project for these incredibly radical, degenerate social issues to be able to be exported imperialistically, right? That's why in the midst of all this, NATO is posting pictures with like the rainbow flag. What does that have to do with everything, actually? Everything. Yes. Pedro, this week there was a massive smear campaign launched against Tucker Carlson in association with the tragedy that happened in Buffalo, all around this quote-unquote idea of the great replacement. This is, of course, nothing that anyone on the center-right talks about. None of us actually even know what this is until the left or the ADL start screaming about it, when they're the ones that have actually been bragging about how mass immigration and demographic change are going to help them politically. And the moment we point it out, all of a sudden we're the ones pushing the theory. What are your thoughts on all of this?
I think that the great replacement is something that if we look at who subscribes to this, who believes in it, you're not going to find anyone that fits that profile better than Democrats and liberals who have been, like you said, screaming about basically weaponizing the demographics of immigration to secure electoral victories and affect political and cultural change. That's ultimately what we're talking about. There's this attempt to kind of reframe it as there's a difference between what I just described to you right now and the Great Replacement somehow, but it doesn't really make sense. The difference is really just an attempt to kind of misdirect. In some ways, it's the reverse of what people like Christopher Rufo have done with critical race theory, where he took something that was a specific thing, and I'm defending this, by the way. I think it was brilliant what he did. He took critical race theory and he said, we're going to use this term because it's slang that people can understand. It's slang that's evocative, and we're going to use it to describe all different matters of basically indoctrination to get people to hate themselves based on their race, right? It was highly effective. It was really effective in mobilizing the grassroots because it ultimately told the truth in just a few words. What I think the Democrats and liberals are trying to do is the same thing, but with the Great Replacement. So in other words, if you criticize immigration, well, you're obviously an advocate of this, you know, anti-Semitic racist conspiracy theory. So now you can't criticize immigration, because if you do, you'll get another Buffalo shooting. It is insanely cynical. It's, for lack of a better word, evil. Because again, these people have been the biggest proponents of using what they think is demography as destiny to basically defeat the Republican Party for good. That is ultimately their goal. It's insane. It's cynical. It's twisted. And it vilifies, you know, only half the country in order for it to work.
Well, and it's, they're the ones, I mean, we played tape for like 10 minutes the other day, where they repeatedly are the ones that are like, well, demographics are destiny. Demographics are destiny, as Scarborough says it over and over and over again. Yeah. And it is this unbelievable smear where then you and I say, like, okay, maybe I'm going to believe that you're actually trying to use mass immigration as a way to get political power. Like, how dare you say that? I mean, we're used to the media being dishonest, Pedro, but this is like a whole different level of like gaslighting deceit.
But that's actually why I think it's not working as well as they want it to.
I agree.
Precisely because it's so well documented. And I mean, there's articles in the New York Times where the headline is, "We can replace them." There's articles in the New York Times by Charles Blow where he's saying that the census, the 2020 census, showed the explosion of the non-white and the shrinking of the white, which he thinks obviously is a good thing because Charles Blow hates white people. You can't read his columns and come away with any other conclusion. The wrong kind of white people, which are the ones that I guess that don't defer to him, right?
They don't work at the New York Times.
Right. In 2016 or 2018, but basically looking back on the election of Donald Trump. Sorry, it was 2018, not 2016. Looking back on the election of Donald Trump, he published an article called White Extinction Anxiety, where he reduced Donald Trump's victory to just that. Basically the last dying gasp of white people in America who he doesn't like. Their time is up. They know it. So they voted Donald Trump in a pathetic last-ditch effort to save themselves. But now suddenly, you know, we have no idea what this is. Tucker Carlson came up with it, popularized it, and then obviously encouraged this shooter at Buffalo through his rhetoric. Of course, the shooter doesn't actually mention Tucker Carlson in his manifesto, in his 180-page screed. He actually is critical of Fox News and pretty much every other media organization. He describes himself as a left-wing authoritarian. It's some like weird position. He says, "I'm a moderate left authoritarian."
Yeah, well, you're dealing with a crazy person. We don't,
right. It's totally schizophrenic. But, and then he mentions this idea of like demography used as a political vehicle, which again, Democrats have openly been taught. Joe Biden in 2015, his vice president, said, I don't know if you played this already, but you know, he said himself that it was a source of our strength that a nonstop wave of immigration would reduce Americans of white European stock to a minority.
Ted Kennedy said that exact same thing in the 60s and 70s, that mass immigration when he passed the bill is going to help the Democrat Party. We're out of time. Pedro, thank you. Contra Substack, check it out. I'm a subscriber. Check it out. It's contra.substack.com. Pedro Gonzalez, thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. And make sure you go to tpusa.com. Click on the pop-up banner when it comes. Give a gift of any amount and get your book immediately. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.